Hello and welcome back to another edition of the Global Gaming Business Podcast, the industry's first and longest running podcast now in our 20th year. How about that? That's like three quarters of my life. As always, I am your host, Jess Marquez, and our guest today is the team from WagerWire, a sports betting exchange platform that is melding the world of betting and trading. From an overhead perspective, the U.S. sports betting landscape has become top-heavy, but when you take a closer look, there are a number of innovative companies breaking the mold and creating new communities within the space. One such example is WagerWire, the app-agnostic sports betting exchange that allows users to buy and sell tickets and track their value over time. I sat down with company founders Zach Doctor, Travis Geiger, and Guy Doden at the recent ICE Barcelona conference to share their story and detail their future plans. So we're here at ICE Barcelona 2025. This is actually my first interview of the show. Thank you guys. And it's funny, we've been circling each other for a long time. We actually first got introduced to each other a year ago in London, and we've pledged to do this ever since, so it's nice to sit down with you guys. So thanks a ton for joining me.
Thank you, man.
Yeah, our pleasure.
So one of my goals, obviously, anytime I do these interviews and go around, is try to give people a platform, give people a voice to get to our audience and, you know, expose them to things that maybe they hadn't seen before. And I think WagerWire is a really good example of that for a number of reasons. But so let's just start out. Let's just start with that. So can you guys kind of, you know, it doesn't have to be like a school classroom, but just kind of go around and like introduce yourselves, kind of where you guys are from and how you guys got together and formed the company.
Sure thing, yeah. I mean, so, you know, originally we were all UCLA buddies going way back, actually in the same fraternity. That's how we got to know each other originally. Me and Trav have been roommates for 7 or 8 years, actually. But we're all off doing our own careers. So I was in finance before this. But then, you know, me and Travis were still roommates at the time, and we came up with this idea for WagerWire, which we'll get into, where he wanted to buy my bet on a Thursday night. But basically, you know, Guy has worked in this industry before. Maybe, yeah, go ahead and give your background too.
Yeah, so met these guys at UCLA. I was a statistics major there. Went back to do a second tour at UCLA to get my master's in statistics and data science. Spent all my time in academia, focused on sports analytics and sports data, and even wrote a master's thesis on sports betting in the NBA. That's kind of the academic side of things, and professionally I've worked at a few different sports tech companies and startups on the data science side and the product management side. So just a lot of experience in my career working with sports and data and tech and startups, and basically got the perfect opportunity to build a company with all the things that I've been doing for my whole career.
Sure. Now what time frame are we talking about here? Like what years? Like what's the...
Yeah, so we came up with the idea in 2018.
Okay.
So me and Travis were still roommates at the time. What is this?
We were
5 years
until he got engaged.
Yeah. So we were in our kind of West Side bachelor pad.
Sure.
And Travis was working in Hollywood. He didn't, you know, could give his background too. But he got home late on a Thursday night and wanted to buy into my bet. And that's how it all started. But
so I was born and raised in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Okay.
They're from the Bay. And yeah, we met at college. It was amazing that we were roommates for that long. But I was working on movies all around the world for Universal, for Warner Brothers.
Really?
Had my own production company. Wow. Even had an agent, which I'm very happy I haven't had to call in like 4 years. It's totally worthless.
He keeps calling.
So what got me really excited about this idea, and we've had a few through the years, but I came back from a film set. Thursday night football game was going on. I didn't want to place a bet on the live line and root for a different outcome than my friend. I really just wanted in on his action.
Sure.
So I was like, let me send you some cash for my share of the bet, and if it wins, you can send me my share of the winnings back. And then we're just like, a light bulb. How does a resale market for bets not exist, and why doesn't it exist? And when we looked into it, we all bootstrapped with our own money to do the initial compliance and diligence, and we realized that this was just one of those nuggets of an idea that has just gone undiscovered. And so think about tickets, concert tickets, sneakers, crypto, stocks, everything that you can purchase as an asset can be resold. Sports bets are still like a risk class, they're not an asset class yet. What got me interested from my media background is that every bet is actually its own story in progress, and the owner of that bet can be the star of that story, and that's actually what we base our media around.
Definitely, and I knew you guys were sickos, but you know the formation from a Thursday night bet. That's how you know.
It's, like, it's just one of these ideas that nags in your head once you think of it.
Some real D-gen stuff right there.
It's really, and everyone has that one D-gen friend that you're like, ooh, I wish I was in on that.
Yeah.
The perfect thing was that like this idea, this incredible idea, also just came to answer your question about the timing right at the exact same time the passport was overturned.
Sure, I was
right?
Say, yeah.
So this sort of went from this silly idea on the couch to like, oh, this could actually be a very viable business because of this incredible macro thing that's happening in the U.S. with the legalization of betting. So the timing ended up being so perfect to have this harebrained idea that goes on at the exact same time as this burgeoning new industry.
Sure, the right place, right time.
Absolutely.
So where would you guys, like, where would you guys say you are right now in terms of like, you know, your presence, kind of just your current status of things as it stands right now in 2025?
We're at a really exciting time in the company right now. So going back to that 2018 moment, we were still in all of our own careers. We're just basically cooking up this idea.
He's the vice president at PNC Bank. He's a client.
And then COVID hits. And so really we formed the company officially in 2021 when we raised a little friends and family money. And now fast forward, you know, we've raised an institutional seed round. Ebert Capital is our lead investor. Really awesome cap table of people from the industry and you know, Richard Jefferson from the NBA. been able to, you know, get some really cool people around this idea because it's just such a like viral concept once it sticks in your head.
Paris Smith, just to stick on that for a second, it means a lot to us that the industry sees what we're doing, respects what we're doing. Everyone from Paris, who ran Pinnacle for 17 years, to Joey Levy, who's, you know, behind Better. So
sure,
the
sure.
Old, like, don't, I'm going to call them the old guard, but the people that built this industry to what it is.
Yeah.
And they have a vision for the future, just how they had a vision to how we got here. They see what we're doing. The people that are part of that paradigm shift, actively building new companies, they also see what we're doing. So we feel really good with the team we have.
Yeah. So in terms of, I'm not saying in terms of like an end goal per se, but like in an ideal world, what would you guys describe as like your place in the marketplace, or like in the overall sports betting world? Like, what is the what would you want WagerWire to represent in that kind of ecosystem?
So we really think of ourselves as everything after you place that bet. That's what WagerWire is here for you to help you with. There's plenty of startups and other companies that are trying to give you the model or whatever it is to help you pick what to bet.
Sure.
There's not a lot of solutions or services for after you place that bet. What should you do with it?
Yeah.
And so whether that's selling your bet to get the best value for it, or even just comparing whether a cash out is a fair cash out or not, or coming up with a hedge solution if you have the capital to just hedge it out yourself. Like, we're here to provide tools and analytics for everything you do after that bet. And ultimately, we're here to serve the bettor and really just like unlock this ability, right? Because you own your concert tickets, you own your sneakers, you can sell them at any time. You own your car, you can sell it not just to the dealer, you can sell it on an open market as well. Right now, sports betting, until this point, has been a closed market. You could cash it out to the sports book if they give you a price. It's probably not a good price if they even offer it. This unlocks that whole ability to just get the max value for your bet. And then it also just unlocks all the fun stories you can do around it. And, you know, basically being able to take, big ticket holders of ours to the Rose Bowl and things like that. Just have fun with it, because this basically, elevates just an average Joe bettor who put $10 on a bet to win $100,000. Now he's one leg away. That becomes a story that goes around social media. You basically kind of get that 15 minutes of fame as a bettor, and just have a ton of fun with it.
And I was gonna say, I've personally just like, I literally have been watching ESPN before and seen your guys' stuff. Like, you know what I mean? Like, exactly like you said, where it's like somebody from God knows where with a 28 leg parlay who really needs like this one thing, and like, you know, mm-hmm. they fly him out to the game, and it's like this whole, you know, it's interesting, it's really fun. And
we want the kind of the word wire to just be synonymous with the idea of like the fair market and just putting a bet on the wire.
Sure.
Like, that's really like the wire should be the place where you get the most value for your bet once you place it.
Sure. You know, I think it's interesting is like, as somebody who covers or tries to cover like basically everything under the gambling umbrella, I think sports betting, at least in the U.S., represents something that's really interesting, where I think maybe to the average person, or from like a really broad, maybe non-industry perspective, people will be like, well, you just have these this glob of companies at the very top who are just eating like this vast majority of market share, and if your name is not FanDuel or DraftKings or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, then like you, there's no place for you, or there's like it's not going to work out. And obviously there are examples we've seen, like, you know, companies either leaving the U.S. or, you know, making hard decisions or whatever. But I think that kind of like it's like kind of glosses over some really interesting niches of the industry, like you guys said. And I think especially from the perspective of like everything besides the bet itself, or like anything like other than placing the bet or like getting picks and stuff like that. And it just from the bettor itself, because as, or the bettor themselves, I should say, because as we see, like, we know from, at least we've seen from years previous in other areas of the world, be it in Europe and Australia and everything, where there's this whole kind of mantra of, like, they call it, like, the banner bankrupt model, right? Where it's like, players are, there's no consideration for the player, it's just, it's transactional. But I think, like, people like you guys and the companies like yours, like, really speak to the kind of like the public side of it, and just really like this, the communal aspect of it, in a way that the operators themselves I don't think do. And I think that's an interesting part of the industry, because like I said, I think from one perspective people may say, well, it's just, it's kind of boring, but then when you look deeper you find really interesting stories like your guys'. So I guess I say all that to just say, like, what is it like, what's the environment like being a gaming startup at this point in the industry, at least from your guys' perspective? Like, what kind of opportunities and challenges does it present?
It's a lot of challenges, which are also opportunity zones, right?
Yeah.
So, as we've gotten our proof points, we've found that these companies that used to exist that were mid-tier are starting to get hollowed out. And so as we achieve scale, and eventually we want to be plugged in with every sports book in the world, right?
And that's that's an interesting point, is that it's agnostic. It's not tied to an operator. It's the overall marketplace, which I think is a key distinction here, but I'm sorry.
No, it's perfect, which is why we're in Barcelona, right? Because the American environment is kind of...
Yeah, I mean, it's this oligopoly you're talking about, or you know, maybe there's six or seven players ultimately at the end of the day. And so for a startup that's trying to get those initial proof points and then start to scale, there's not a lot of options in the middle, basically. But we've had, you know, you've had success in fantasy as well as with, you know, smaller sportsbook operators. Europe is really interested, which we're excited about, because this doesn't exist in Europe either. They have Betfair. Betfair's a little bit different. That's an exchange where you're creating a new bet. It's me versus you. Really, it's you versus Susquehanna or somebody else on the other side.
Yeah, yeah.
So like the average Joe doesn't stand a chance, and it just has a barrier to entry with, like, it's, you know, fairly sophisticated. So this is more like a, you know, we put a deal, guys, incredible team with data science and in-house and engineering, they'll calculate a suggested price for you. So when you go to sell it, we say, you know, it'll probably clear the market around $80.
Yeah.
And if you want to list it at 90, then you're going to get a C deal score on it because you're kind of, you know, above market. If you want to list it at 75 to make it move quickly, we'll put an A+ deal score on it and it'll fly off the market. So, you know, we've been able to basically kind of just bring fresh eyes to this too, to come up with solutions like that, that, like, every single ticketing company has some sort of deal score rating, like, you know, bringing those kind of solutions here. But, you know, at the same time, like, we do want to partner with every sportsbook we can. I think what we have to, you know, what we're basically proving out right now is that this actually expands the pie for the sportsbooks too, right? Like, it's a very bettor friendly solution.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have this feature that's very bettor friendly that other operators don't, you know, you're going to create loyalty. You're going to have product differentiation. You're going to be able to actually have a stickier product-led experience that's not just promo bets and free, you know, free deposit matches and things like that, where people just churn over and over again. So that's really what we're here to do, is build loyalty, build, you know, actually have a kind of community built around a product.
Community is important. Yeah. Like, look, I don't think there's a ton of loyalty. Like, does somebody call them themselves a FanDuel bettor? Does someone call themselves a DraftKings bettor? They're just a sports bettor. So, like, and actually, there's starting to be an adversarial relationship between the bettors and the books, where they feel like they're getting screwed and the game is rigged. So what we offer the books is a solution to put the power back in the bettors' hands, but like he said, grow the overall pie. We can't say the word on this podcast, but Dave Portnoy has a name for Cash Out. That's anatomical and a button. And we want to flip that on its head, where you feel like you're actually cashing in, naming your own prize, selling it to your, like, to your friend. What that's going to do in aggregate is you're going to take more swings than you would have. You'll place 5 or 6 teams to go all the way in March Madness and be managing them off. What that means for the book is you're going to have more losing bets in aggregate, but you're going to have people winning along the way, feeling like they're winning.
And I think, like you guys just touched on, I think that's such a good point of this discussion, in the sense of, like, bettors, like, the competition of the marketplace has made it such that, like, bettors are jumping from you have, like, there's, like, studies, every study that I read is, like, the average U.S. bettor has 6.7 apps, you know what I mean? Like, I just don't think that sense of loyalty is really there as it would be maybe in other forms of gaming. So I think this, like, again, these type of solutions, I think, are really unique to this sector that make it really interesting right now.
I think, if I may add on that, it's sure. like, I think it's, we see exactly that, right? Because in our app, people can sync their sports books and they can track everything in one place, their portfolio, and they have 3, 4, or 5 accounts often, right? And I think it is just because people are bonus hopping and there's not really a reason to stay with one book over the other. But you know, we're here to basically create that for our partners, create that stickiness and that long-lasting engagement.
I think the reason that the fantasy companies have been very successful, mm-hmm. put like the white space gray area aside, is that they're winning over friend groups at a time, couches at a time, not individuals that they're paying off. And what we do with this socialized experience, where you can cut your friend in on a bet that he might not have been, even placed himself at a book that he doesn't have, and now he's joining you, and now you're playing there together, that is going to drive the loyalty, the users, the friend groups, the action that these books want, and they don't have, but the fantasy companies do.
And the startups are an important part of this, like, kind of going back to your point. Like, if you think about the, to borrow statistics term, the bimodal distribution of the industry, where you got these big gatekeepers on one side, and then you got a whole bunch of startups on the other side, and in the middle is, like, hollowed out, as Travis was saying. It's kind of the responsibility of the startups to innovate and come up with new ideas and cool ideas for the bigger companies to then listen to and innovate, you know, in partnership with. So we are actually a very important part of the ecosystem to come up with these novel ideas. And I think the fantasy industry actually done a very good job of that, and the sports betting industry is catching up.
So to Guy's point, I don't think it's tenable to not innovate. You're going to get the hammer coming down on you either with its advertising, RG, mental health, consumer protection.
Sure.
I mean, innovation in product needs to take all those things into account. It can't just be another way to squeeze people, because people are smart and they feel it. And you can't pay a celebrity to tell someone what to do anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You can't give them money that's hard to withdraw anymore. You have to do something different.
I want to stick with you, Guy, for a second, in terms of, like, it's one thing to have, you know, have an idea or have something, but it's another thing to actually execute on it and build it. So, like, in terms of, like, the tech data side of it, like, what is it like for you guys to actually just go out and do the thing and, like, bring the and make this thing that has never been really done before? What's it like for you guys?
So the first step was to learn about the industry and learn about the technology of the industry, and it's a shit show. Frankly. You can say that on TV, right?
Yep.
So that was kind of step one, is, like, understand the state of play. And then from there, it's about building the right team. And because sports betting and fantasy and gaming in general is very niche, we needed people that had some experience in the space. Like, you can do without it, and we need to have fresh eyes and innovate from an outside perspective. But from, like, an infrastructure level, you do need people that know what they're doing. And the Venn diagram of extremely talented engineers and scrappy startup-minded folk and the people that understand sports betting is a very small overlap, right? But we have them, which is awesome.
Yeah.
So they make my job way easier, because they can identify problems that they've seen before and act on it because they have experience with that. So we are very fortunate to have the team we do, and it makes my job and the company as a whole, our work, way easier because they're good at what they do.
It actually goes back to what you brought up before too, is that as a startup in this industry, you have to deal with compliance and regulations and GLI 33 certification and all these things that actually create barriers to entry for a startup and capital costs and everything. So it's actually tough compared, you know, you can't spin up an app in your basement and launch it in this industry. You're going to end up, you know, in jail probably. So at least hauled in front of some sort of gaming board.
Yeah.
So basically, like, it does require probably millions of dollars and extremely talented engineers and patents and all this and legal opinions and all this stuff. And so, you know, it's an uphill battle for startups in this industry, but at the same time, that means there's less people going after it.
Sure.
There's really, you know, kind of, if you can navigate those things and figure out how to build a cool solution in a compliant way, then you've got the path to actually have something pretty defensible and at least have a pretty good head start on anyone else trying to, you know, chase after you.
I agree. So I want to finish up here, and this has been great. I really appreciate you guys sitting down. This has been really fun. One thing that really interested me about you guys in particular is, like, you guys exist on this plane, or this, like, this idea of the melding, the mesh of betting and trading and like the gamification of the game. Like it's like a really interesting sector that like I think is kind of growing in momentum, and we see other kind of like adjacent like spin-offs, like you got the prediction markets and things like that, which are similar but obviously not the same. But it's just, I think the sector overall is like is gaining steam. So I'm just kind of curious like what it's like for you guys, like almost 10 years into this, kind of seeing this really like, you know, start to kind of take hold. I think it's a really interesting time.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we're very interested in those, you know, poly markets of the world and things like that too. Really cool solutions. We're even hearing Robinhood might be getting into sports betting. Yeah. I think it's a really interesting, you know, intersection of the demographics. I think we're trying to bring that same Wall Street Bets energy to sports betting, right?
Yeah.
I think there is a niche culture around sports betting for the kind of, you know, really into it sports fan. But, you know, this is trading is a whole nother audience that is going to be really into this once they get into it. Because it's the same way you run models on a stock or an option trade. You can run models on sports and get really into it. And then you can basically get the Reddit boards going and buying low and selling high. It is that thing, though, that you need some way to engage beyond just placing the bet to really unlock that conversation. And I think that's what our product does. And, you know, things like Polymarket, where you can buy and sell, kind of unlocks that ability where, like, you're not just sitting and waiting and seeing what happens. You can be involved the whole
way. One of the things we have in common with those markets is that, like, you have the autonomy to sell when you want and buy when you want, and you can, you know, time out, you know, your strategy or whatever. The way sports betting is structured now, it's like the house always wins is always in the back of your head, even when cash out is offered. It's like, I actually made a call of a bet that's in the money. Like Calvin, God bless him, tonight Ohio State plays national championship.
$437,000
on the line. His bet's worth $320,000.
Yeah.
And he's gonna ride it. He actually bought another bet to double down.
Yeah, exactly.
But like he's in control of that bet. I think in the age of when casinos are limiting, in the age of these, I mean, you don't have to go any further than a chat room to see people complaining about these books. We think we have a solution that can be holistic for the health of the industry. And that's what it's really all about. We can't survive unless this industry is healthy, and so we want to be part of the solution.
And, you know, our lead investor, Roger, talks about the degenerate economy, which is sort of what we're talking about here.
Yeah,
these people that are high frequency.
That's a great way, yeah.
Yeah, in the most, you know, friendly way possible. Well, in possible economies, people degenerate. You know, and I'm one of them. I've written a sports betting model for, you know, the NBA. So I get it. I've been there. But I think what's cool about our product is, although it can cater to those people, it's as compelling to the casuals, right? It can be the truck driver in Arizona who put, you know, a dollar parlay to that crazy odds to win $680,000 and then used our platform to sell it. So in the case that his bet would lose, which it did, he still got enough profit to buy himself a new car. So, like, that's, I think, an important part of what we're serving, is it's something that can, you know, appease the day traders, the degens, but also is like relevant and easy to use for the casuals.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Well, again, guys, this has been really great. We've been trying to do this for a long time, and I'm really glad we did. Everybody look out for WagerWire. I certainly will be, and I'm sure we'll do this again soon. I can't wait to see how you guys grow.
Thanks, Jess. A long-time listeners, first-time callers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, thanks for having us on. You know, we both live in L.A., and we had to go all the way to Barcelona to figure
exactly,
this out.
Yeah. Maybe next time we'll go to Macau or something like
right,
that.
Right, exactly. Right, exactly. Sounds good.
Apparently you're not a cheap date, I guess.
All right, guys. Appreciate it.
We thank you for joining us on this episode of the Global Gaming Business Podcast. To learn more about WagerWire, sports betting, and all things gaming, head to ggbmagazine.com. To stay abreast of the weekly news of the gaming industry, head to ggbnews.com and use the code GGB180 for a free subscription. Don't miss an episode of the GGB Podcast by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks, and we'll see you next time.